Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to talk about listening. Can you hear me? I'll explain. You know, I've always said that I've hired more actors based on their ability to listen in a scene that I was auditioning them with than their ability to say their lines. I don't know if that's a completely fair statement, but that seems to be my recollection, because I was always more impressed with the way an actor could listen, would listen. But I think most importantly, I've said this many times in acting classes, because it is at that moment that I can actually see what kind of an actor I have. I can't stress how important this is. I really mean it when I say I've hired more actors on their listening, because that is, to me, the sign of a very present and aware actor. Can't stress it enough, and I'm trying to, because actors really don't pay attention. They have all this fury and might while they're doing their lines, and then it's like, many times, just see the screens drop, and they just kind of stare ahead. I think some actors think that if they just stare with intent, that'll be good enough. Now, I know this may seem crazy to some of you, but look, I've been teaching 37 years. I see this, like, often in professional classes. But what happens is the actor, I think, isn't necessarily aware they're doing it, because to a great extent, they may have momentarily checked out without realizing they have, and they don't realize all eyes are upon them. They're just not thinking about it for a second. They're caught up on what they just did, what they need to do. Did they screw up that last line? Do they know their next line? You know, why are they standing? They wanted to be sitting here. You know, all this extraneous nonsense that actors think about. And so for me, this is when I can tell when I have, you know, a very competent actor by the way they listen. That's it. It's almost like no matter how much they may have butchered the lines, forgotten some lines, skipped over a line, what other little foibles may have occurred, I can generally tell what type of actor I have by those in-between moments where I'm watching them do something where they really don't have any other obligation but to actively listen. And what do I mean by actively listen? Well, I guess the distinction would be between actively listening and passively listening. You know, I don't know. I think that there are probably many times that we are passive listeners in many scenes. You know, we may be somewhere and it's of no consequence, and we play the person the other person is chattering on to, and it may be somewhat benign to our character, the situation, and so we passively listen. We have nothing, you know, we don't have a dog in this particular fight. It could happen, but generally, most of the time, we're watching actors acting together in scenes. The actors are actively listening. What I mean by that is, well, there's always going to be some sort of conflict in scenes. I mean, that's what makes for drama and what makes for comedy. And so if you're telling me something, I'm actively listening in the sense that whatever it is that's coming out of your mouth has to do with what I'm going to do next or what I'm going to say next. I mean, it's all hinging on it. This information you're giving me has weight. It's important. I need to know it. There's some consequence to it. It's going to bear on what's going to happen next. I mean, so on and so forth. And so we actively listen in the sense that, you know, I'm using that phrase to suggest that when we're listening in these instances, you know, it's active because the information as we see it is important to us. I think you could agree with that, yes? Why wouldn't we make it important? Of course it's important. I mean, things of much less weight in life seem to be way more important to people. And so certainly in scripts that have been carved out of human behavior so that we can see some aspect of it, and this is what we're going to be you know, filming and showing the audience, obviously we've probably raised the stakes and everything has some sort of importance. And so active listening. You know, if you tell an actor, if you just say, hey, man, you got to listen better. Well, what does that mean? And how do I do that? I'm listening. I mean, I can hear everything. You know, snap your fingers. Yeah, I hear that. I heard that car outside. You know, whatever. Of course I'm listening. Listening, though, to what end? You see, and this is what makes it active for me. Listening to what end? And actors don't think about this enough, and I really think it's a key to not only giving better performance, but really for facilitating a much better spontaneity in acting. Because almost like somebody snapping their fingers in the middle of a scene, it's getting my attention. Now, this may seem, you know, very simple to some of you. You'd say, yes, well, of course, you know, what else? But I'm doing a podcast on it because even with the finest actors that I work with, I notice this happening. And, you know, because we tend to fall back in those moments when we're not talking and think about perhaps what we just did and other thoughts that race into our head, and certainly more often when we're acting than in life, because, of course, there is this sense that we know that deep down, everything that's occurring right now is of no real consequence. I mean, this isn't really happening. I'm not really dying, and you're really not the murderer. We're acting in scenes, and there is a camera just over your left shoulder. And so the consequence is, let's do some great acting, and so our mind tends to float over to that side of the line, as opposed to in life where, because it is real, we have a different kind of, you know, hyper pin spot focus on what's going on. And so all words coming out of the other person's mouth, all things occurring that we're listening to have potentially a much greater impact on what's going to happen in the next few minutes. And so listening, actively listening in life, man, that just comes with being able to hear, but not so much when we act. So what is this missing ingredient? What is this thing that actors are not thinking about? Well, you go into a scene and you think, okay, you know, I've said what I said now, and now I'm going to listen to you. And the one thing I remind actors of all the time, and this, again, these are very, very simple things, but I'll say it again and again. It's usually going over these simple things over and over again that gets those lights to go on in actors' heads, and then, you know, improvement is made. And so forgive me for going over what may seem obvious to some of you, but listen, as obvious as it is, I don't see it enough. And that is not knowing what the other person is going to say. So we not only divorce ourselves from that knowledge of what the other person's going to say, because we know what the other person's going to say. We've been going over the lines, for God's sake. In fact, what the other person's about to say is my cue line for my next line. So of course I know what the other person's going to say, you see? So what the actor does is they feign kind of a, oh, I didn't know you were going to say that kind of sensibility, or, oh, and we look and we may cock our head and then go, while they're speaking. But we're not actively listening. I mean, the very thing we're going to do next, or how we're going to sort things out in real life, is based on the information we get from the person. What do they know? What do they not know? What is the way they're telling it to us? Why are they choosing those words? You see, in life, many of us, most of us perhaps, are very keen on being able to figure out how this thing is slanted. You know, when a person speaks in real life and they're giving us some information, and perhaps it pertains to something that we may have done. Now, let me give you an example, for instance. I'll give you something dramatic just for drama's sake. But let's say that a very close friend of yours is in the military and was sent overseas to fight somewhere. And while this friend of yours was gone, you're, of course, very friendly and very good friends with his wife. You know, he's gone for a year. She's lonely. You're, you know, you guys have some drinks one night. You admit to each other that, you know, you were actually first attracted to her, but, you know, your other buddy took advantage of an opportunity because you had to go out of town for a few months to go do some work. And then when you came back, you know, it was too late to... And so you have one of these scenes, and you end up having an affair. And let's say, in fact, that you had the affair and then realized that it was just wrong and it just didn't feel right. And so, you know, even though you guys did this thing, you both decided that, look, this was a mistake. This is not right. And you both want to bury this. You feel horrible that you betrayed your friend and certainly his wife feels horrible that she did the same. And so a pact is made. You know, we're not going to ever discuss this. It's never going to come up. And you know for a fact that this woman is not some bust-out alcoholic or drug user. I say this because you know that she's very rational, so you can't think that there could be a time, you know, where she might get a little drunk and angry and then just blurt out, yeah, I had sex with your friend, you know, something. In order to get back for some reason. You know, she's not like that. In fact, she's, let's say, a teacher at the local high school. She's got way too much to lose to, you know, make these kinds of errors. And so once you guys say, hey, you know what, we're never going to discuss this, you never do again. Now, let's say 4 months go by, your friend comes into town, you go out, now you're having drinks. And there's something about him. He just feels a little off. And as you're in the scene, you can't decide whether or not it is personal or this is maybe PTSD. You don't know, but you know your friend's attitude towards you has changed. You know that in real life, what happens if you've ever done anything wrong, you know, perhaps colored just outside of the lines about any issue. When we get around that person who might be able to bust us in a particular situation, regardless of what they may or may not know, most people's guilt will always be wondering whether or not, oh my goodness, is this why you asked me to lunch? Do you know? Is that why we're having a coffee? Do you know? Is this why you said, hey, let's go duck hunting and you now have a shotgun? Do you know? You know, this is what people tend to do. I mean, think about these things. Look, this whole real life actor approach and philosophy is about not me trying to convince you of things that I swear are true, but I'm really trying to appeal to your sensibilities, your real-life sensibilities, your sense of common sense, logic, and your own experiences. You see, this is how I feel I try to get to actors, because this is what I mean when I say I try to get them to viscerally understand things as opposed to intellectually, because I don't think the intellectual thing works as much or as well as the visceral thing. So if I tell you something like this and then you go back, it doesn't certainly have to be about an affair. It could be about anything you ever did where you crossed a line in a situation and then you meet up with some people later and you wonder if they know about that thing. It could be borrowing a shirt. It could be using their car. It could be, you know, anything, anything. Being on their computer for a little while because yours was broken and, you know, you may have seen something there. Whatever would make you feel guilty, those things, we go into that next situation, we tend to wonder, does that person know about this thing? And so what happens? Oh man, do we start actively listening then, you see? So it's not just about, oh, I'm going to listen, and then, no, I'm going to listen as if I'm hearing it for the first time. So I kind of tilt my head this way, and then I tilt my head that way while you're talking, and I swear to you, I'm listening as if it's the first time. Yes, but to what end? And this is what most actors miss. To what end? What are you listening for, you see? This is what makes it active. I'm listening for all sorts of information. I'm listening and watching as you're speaking. I'm looking at you. I'm trying to figure out, are you different? If you're different, what is it? Is this PTSD? When you said to me, hey, some friends of mine saw you driving around one day up around the cabin. Did you go out to the cabin? Okay, now is that loaded? Did his friends also say that there was a woman in the car? Do they know who the woman was? Is this his way of kind of coming around it to see what my reactions are? Is he toying with me? Is it an innocent question? Is he asking me because he's missed going up to the cabin, and that's something we always did together? We'd go fishing all the time. We've done it since we were children. Is this just a benign question, or is it a pointed question, you see? And in real life, those of us who are certainly good at sorting things out, man, we're looking for all the ticks and tells. I'm looking at the way that was phrased. I'm thinking of everything. Some friends of mine. What do you mean, some friends of yours? Why would you say it that way? Why wouldn't you tell me who your friends were? Because guess what? Your friends are my friends. So why didn't you say, Tom and Greg saw you when they were up. Why do you say some friends? Are your friends your friends now and my friends are my friends? Have we broken up? Are we no longer brothers? What happened? We no longer good friends? You see what I mean? And the problem is that the actor may key on a few moments like that and then decide to look this away and that away in order to kind of exhibit some sort of, oh, he's on to me now, look at the way I looked away. But actively listening is going into a situation knowing what I told you, what I front-loaded this with, the affair that you had, and then sitting down with what hope? What would your hope be? Your hope would be is that he doesn't know, we are going to move on, and soon months will pass, then years, and this will be a distant mistake. That's all. It was a thing that we decided we wanted to visit, you and the gal, you wanted to visit and do, and she was lonely, and it was just one of those crazy nights, and it happened, and then as quickly as it started, it went away. It was a mistake. Let's just pretend like it didn't happen. There was no malicious intent. And so as we sit down, we hope that that is behind us. We feel guilty. And as we sit down in this first meeting with our friend who is now back, we would like to feel as though we can move ahead. You've sorted that out with the girl. Now you'd like to hopefully sort this out with him. And so at this first meeting, does he know? And you know subsequently there'll be other meetings, and it'll be some time before you finally figure, okay, that thing is gone and buried and it's never going to come up again. But if somebody has a tale to tell, and this fellow's back in town, well, they're more than likely going to sort this, seek this fellow out so that they can tell him about the tale. And then when this fellow comes to meet you, he may want to ask you about it. A lot of apprehension, yeah? Because you know how it is when you have really, really good friends and you've done something that is kind of, in many cultures would be considered really, really bad. Yes, you might be able to lie your way out of it, but who wants to be in that situation? Because the fact is, friends know us very well, and this stuff is really tricky. Rather just not have to go through this little lie detector test, yeah? So as we sit down, our objective, our desire in a real-life situation is not to think, okay, lie your way out of this one. No, we just hopefully the whole thing's going to go away. We're never going to hopefully present the image of someone who has something to hide. We're going to be loosey-goosey and cool and everything. We're not going to be too much this way or too much that way. We're not going to act too happy, and we're not going to act a little sad. We're not going to act, apprehensive at all, but then we're not going to act like we're overdoing it in order to compensate for something odd, which is going to finally make your friend go, "What's up with you, man? Why you act so goofy today? You got something on your mind?" And then do that. Now, you know what I'm talking about. It's a very careful thing. It's not just one thing. We try to get the spices just right in these situations. So now you're sitting down with this idea that you would what? Like this to be behind you, yeah? And so you would do everything you could in order to make sure that we're moving past this. You're probably asking him the appropriate questions about his deployment, what he's going to do now that he's back. Would he ever go back? You're trying to keep the conversation away. But then you're smart enough to know, okay, but you got to mention the wife once in a while. Otherwise, why aren't I not talking about her? Why aren't I saying, hey, was it good to get back, man? Is everything cool again with you guys? You know, are you having fun in the sack? Whatever, I don't know. It's a very tricky little combination that you're trying to finesse so that you're not found out. And what goes with that? Well, making eye contact when it's appropriate and not sitting there looking at him like you got something to hide. You're wondering if he knows. This is all part of active listening because I'm also communicating with you while I'm listening. If you are someone who is in charge of me and you're giving me the business, it might be completely appropriate for me to stare at you, look right into your eyes the whole time because looking away would be disrespectful. And we've all had to do that probably at one time or another because then that person goes, hey, look at me when I'm talking to you. And they mean not at my chin, and they mean at my eyes. I need to make sure you're getting it, blah, blah, blah. And that's how you have to listen. But that isn't how we always listen either. We don't stare into people's eyes necessarily. It gets uncomfortable sometimes, you know? I mean, the other person has to know we're listening, and so what we make sure of is that you know I'm listening to you. And that's easy to do. I can go down and, you know, take a sip of my coffee, and with my glances as I look at you, you can feel my intellectual presence with you. You know that I am here with you. I know how to do it. Even as I'm reaching across to get something to put in my coffee, or I kind of look over my shoulder to see if I can get the waitress's attention because it turns out I don't have a fork. Whatever's going on, as you're telling me this, I'm actively listening. I can even do all of these other things and even look away for a moment and still allow you to understand my consciousness is still with you. I'm not, it's suddenly gone away now and I'm really thinking about my fork. I'm actually still with you in this incredible story. So we know how to let people know we're listening to them. And sometimes it is appropriate to stare in their eyes, and other times it's not what we're doing. I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes I can be staring into someone's eyes and then it gets a little weird for me and I have to look away and I still want to hear their story, but I don't know what that is. I become very self-aware. You've probably done that. But you also know how to make sure the person knows that you're still listening. The point of this particular podcast is to understand what active listening is and how, when we're actively listening, well, we're doing the best for ourselves, for the other character, and certainly for the story. I mean, you actors that want to do all the clever stuff while you're listening, if you really are actively listening, in other words, let's go back to the scenario I gave you with the two friends meeting and that situation. When your friend then says something like, Greg and Tom saw you going up to the cabin, and you know the only time you went up there was when his wife was in your car, in real life, what would happen? Well, you wouldn't want to give the friend that knows you, perhaps better than anyone else in the world, a tick or a tell. So you would move past that, you see? Now, where does the clever come in acting here? Well, the great part of it is, and I've said it to actors again and again, if you think it, we will see it as the audience. Because, of course, you can only let the audience see what you would have the other character see. Let's remember that. You can't do something and then expect the audience gets it. You know, you've done a little nod and a wink for the audience to understand, uh-oh, tough moment, yet your friend who's sitting 2 feet in front of you can't see it. So, of course, you've got to do what you would do in real life, and that is navigate through that the same way you would. Will the audience know? Yes, of course. Why? Well, they've been front-loaded with all the information. They know about the affair. They know you're nervous going into the scene. They know what your apprehension is, you see? Now, I say this phrase over and over again to actors, and that is, you always want the audience leaning into you. Don't lean into the audience. That's what a lot of actors do. And what I mean by that is they're always kind of, you know, here's what's happening, here's what I'm doing, here's my emotion. And they're leaning, they're out towards the audience. No, we want the exact opposite. We want the audience to lean into us. We want them to lean in. What is he thinking? What is she thinking? What's going on? Oh my goodness, what's happening? What's going on in their head right now? What are they going to do next? They're leaning in, you see? It's the exact opposite of what actors generally do, but it's the exact thing that most people do in life, of course, because we keep most of our cards hidden. That's how it is. You know, if you have five cards that say who you are, five playing cards, and these would describe who you were, most people only reveal one or two, and three are not known by anyone for all of time. Because let's face it, we all have sides of us that we don't let anyone know about. I don't mean that in any kind of mysterious, ugly fashion. It's just, you know, we're not open books. There are things about us that people don't know. But that's part of the mystery, you see. That's part of our own identity that we don't reveal to everyone. That is our ace in the hole. That is the thing that makes us so unique and hopefully interesting to people. And so the same should be there for the actor. So what does the actor sit down with in a scene like this? You sit down with something as simple as you would in life, and that is, I don't want him to know. Does he know? That's it. That's it. You don't have to play that. That's the knowledge any person would have, right? You don't have to think about all the other stuff and your backstory and what happened yesterday. I think, first of all, I explained that little incident about the guy and the gal, right? You get it. You felt it. You know, wrong. You know, you had affair, bad. What do you need to know? The actor will sit down and write everything, and then she unbuttoned my shirt. As I looked out the cabin window, I knew I was headed into some rough waters, but I, you know, come on, man. And do you think you play all that shit? What more do you need to know? What, you got to know the details? You got to run it all back and go through all the, you know, physical gymnastics that you had? And how you laughed and drank, you know, wine? What? Come on. You did a no-no, and now your buddy's back. Right? What else do you need to know? Now, you see, what happens is the more you have in your head that you think you need to know, the more chance there is for the actor to then go into their homework while they're watching. And now we're back to those dead eyes staring. I'm trying to puppeteer myself with all of my knowledge and all the work that I did in the backstory. Now I'll have a little reminiscence of the wine by the fireplace that night in the cabin. Oh, I'm guilty. You know, man, come on. This is such bullshit. I wish all of you that did this stuff would just stop for a second and think, is that the stuff that goes through your head in real life? That's all I do. You know, that's it. That's my whole study. My whole study, all my life of the real life actor in this approach is always comparing it to what actually goes down in real life. We can't improve on that, folks. If we could, we would. Then it would be real life. Then we'd just be doing real life again because that is the best. So that's it. If I were in this situation, that's all I'd be sitting down with. I don't want him to know. Does he know? Now, that's it. I don't ever have to think about it again. I don't have to have it go across my forehead like those lights on the blimps that we see in the skies, you know, spelling out messages. The audience knows what's going on. I now have to look out for myself, and they will witness this event. That's what's going to happen. And with that comes what? My earnest desire not to be caught, not to be found out, to put this behind me, not to wreak havoc on a friendship, not to disrespect him like this. He just went off and served our country, and while he was gone, come on, man. This is all bad, horribleness. Who wants to be a part of that? I don't. So what do? Well, I sit down knowing that I don't want him to know, and I wonder if he does. And that's it. And what's the thing that I want more than anything? To put this behind me, to get it behind us, to follow through on the pact I made, because it's bigger than just me, right? I mean, yes, I know it takes two to tango, but if I had not tangoed, there wouldn't have been two. So, you know, I could wreak havoc on this, my good friend, his wife, who I also know in this town, we grew up together. I don't want to destroy her life. So you see, it's bigger than me. It's the both of us. We've made a pact. I've got to follow through. That's my obligation. Now I'm going to bring all of my powers to bear to be as clever as I can, to assume this isn't, I'm not being tricked, that she didn't break and, you know, 30 minutes ago. I mean, I don't know. Did she in fact have a crisis of conscience and tell him what happened and now I'm being tested? I mean, you know, these things go through us, yet we still hold it together and make sure that we're following through and doing the thing to, you know, keep us from as much harm and heartache as possible. And so we go into this active listening. That's it. I listen to everything that's coming out of his mouth. I'm watching the way he's sitting. I'm looking, I'm doing that. I'm not letting him know I do that, but I'm clocking him. You know, and we clock it, and people don't know we're clocking it. The audience will know you're clocking it because, as I said, they've been front-loaded, so they know what's happening here. And now they're watching, you see. And you do the slightest thing, they're going to pick up on it. And so this whole idea of if you think it, they will see it, oh, absolutely so, particularly in a situation like this. This is where you get to be a masterful listener. If you actively listen. So forget where you know the scene's going. Forget there's another reason why I hate this acting bullshit tradition. Is it's very hard to actively listen and just be here in the pocket like it's the first time when I know that in a moment there's going to be a beat change or I have a action verb, so I'm about to do something, or I'm, you know, going to have this little thing that I've planned out. You see, it's very hard to divorce yourself from that knowledge coming up. And so while I'm sitting here trying to really, in earnest, actively listen, it's slightly encumbered by all of the plans I have coming up. And those of you that say, no, it becomes muscle memory. I just do it again and again and again and again, and then it just happens. Yeah, okay. Wake up. So you sit down with that, and then you follow through with that. And if you actually are clocking everything about what's going on, I sometimes bring up that image that most of you know from watching like Terminator Two, where, you know, we're looking through Schwarzenegger's eyes and those red lines are going and just telling you every size what's going on. Is that a threat? You know, it's kind of how we look at people in these situations without all of the graphics, but our mind is jumping around. What does that mean? Why did he do that? Why did he straighten up when he said that line? Why does he avoid telling me? Is he doing it, or is it unimportant to him who saw us in the car? Is he actually happy about the fact I used the cabin, or is there something more here? And when you allow your mind to innocently hear that stuff for the first time and sort it out in real time, you have active listening. And you actually kind of do get lost, you see? And that's really what we want. As much as possible, within the constraints of working on a set or even on stage, we want to be able to just let it go, man. It's going to be close enough to what's supposed to happen because we're all going to say the same lines. We're the same person. We're on the same set at the same table, you know, with the same given circumstance. It's all going to be close enough. And, you know, that other character is going to do what they're going to do. And then they may change something, you see. And if I'm actively listening and they pause for a split second where they didn't before, or if I think, well, I feel like you just made that up, you know, this time. Will it change how I am responding in real time? Absolutely. Wouldn't it? This is what we have to be keen for, folks. So, active listening. If you give yourself something simple at the beginning, like, I don't want him to know, does he know? That's the only thing a person would do. That's it. I've told you enough about that affair, haven't I? Come on, folks. Why? Well, I don't know. I'm assuming you're over 12 or 14 years old. Most of you listening to this, you've probably had some sort of situations occur in your life. All that stuff just kind of fills in. You know what I mean. You know, you don't have to think about every single aspect of garment removal. You don't have to write this shit down. What are you writing down? What are you, forgetful? You can't remember stuff? You got it. I mentioned a cabin and the basic situation, and I guarantee you that most of you, if not every single person, when you heard this, your mind just had little explosions of, oh yeah, I got that. Bad. And then husband back, does he have PTSD? Does he not? Why is he acting like this? Didn't you get all that? You felt it viscerally. You felt it. It went beyond just an intellectual understanding. You thought to yourself, sitting down, yeah. And there's this kind of an awareness you have. You know, it feels like something you're familiar with, you see, as the actor. And then you step in there and then actively listen with only that idea in your mind. I don't want him to know. I wonder if he knows. And then what's the objective here? Man, let's get through a meal. Let's rekindle our relationship. Let me find out what's going on with him. Let's just move past this. And the best way to do it is let's just get on with whatever he's talking about and let's have a nice full conversation. He's expecting me to have some effervescence, some spring in my step. I didn't get deployed, so I should be happy. He's going to ask me questions. Let me answer them as fully as I would. If he says, hey, man, is there something weird with you? Let me then rejig what I'm doing and come up with the answer I need to get past this, to get through this, because I have an obligation to his wife not to let this thing go sideways. Yeah? This is something that I think actors need to think about more. I don't think they think about it enough. And I think when they do, it's in a very kind of, here's where I listen, and it's almost like paint by numbers kind of, oh, he says that, oh, my eyes will widen, oh, over there, I'll cough and, you know, drop the sugar packet, you know, no, you see, and the beautiful thing about this is when you actively listen, man, that's when I find, no matter how nervous I am, or how, you know, off my feet I feel when it starts, I find myself much more able to kind of drop into the pocket in that moment when the other person's speaking and I'm actively listening. That's the thing that actually gets me to zero up and just get right in there, you see? That's when I can usually find myself present, and then it starts. And then now, you see, I've been listening to figure out what I'm going to do next, and it somehow it affects me, and I loosen my hands up on the reins, and suddenly I feel like this is way more authentic because I feel my presence here. Active listening. This is what we're after, folks. And don't complicate it. It's as truthful as it needs to be if you understand what your primary need is here. Once you figure that out in the scene, what you're after, what you need, what you're looking for, what the problem is, then you can just look at that other character and figure out how this all sorts out with regard to that. And what information you're getting that people take for granted because you go over and over and over your stuff and you never stop to think about it. But what information you're getting and how it, in real time, is affecting how you're feeling. And also the ticks and tells, body attitude, body language, all these things in life, man. We tell people later on, we go, yeah, we're sitting there. And then he just kind of sat back and looked at me, and his head tilted, and I knew he knew. Those are huge moments in life, you see, because we're actively listening. And we're actively listening for specific information. That's what you have to do as actors. Okay? I hope you heard me. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Please remember to follow us on Podomatic or subscribe on iTunes. If you want to know anything else about the Real Life Actor approach, you can always go to reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.